left the comfortable palace of Hastinapur under the strong influence of the great sadhu Vidur, who had been traveling on pilgrimage for so many years. When that occurred, they left one night without telling anyone, and the next morning Yudhisthira Maharaj and Sanjaya were lamenting. They were shocked, actually. Actually, it was a shocking thing, because an elderly blind man who was fully at the mercy of that which was provided to him by Yudhisthira and the facilities offered by Sanjaya, suddenly leaving. What a difficult situation he would be placed in. But actually, in Dhritarashtra's mind, he was hopeful. He actually, due to the instructions of Vidura, became fixed on the transcendental platform. At least understanding that he himself was not his body, and therefore the comforts and conveniences offered to his body were not actually enjoyable to him, the soul. The soul actually exists on another level. And if one accepts the conveniences offered to the body, thinking that he is happy, identifying himself with the body, the result of that is that not only does he experience the pleasures of the body, but he also experiences the pain. And as many of us already know, and eventually as everyone will find out, that the body is capable of a lot more pain than it is pleasure. You can take any part of the body and think about it, from your biggest toe to the top of your head or your ears or your fingers. Just imagine the most pleasure you can experience from any part of your body. And then just imagine the pain that you can experience from that same part of the body. How much pleasure can I experience with this finger? But if I took a hammer and whacked it, so we can understand that it is not a good deal. It is not a proper bargain, because the body ultimately is made for misery. So Dhritarashtra rid himself of the contamination of identification with the body, knowing that the time factor would bring him death. So therefore, he actually, by the strength of his determination, by the power of the potent preaching of Vidura, by that power he transcended comfort and misery in the material world and decided to practice austerity and just focus his mind on the spiritual platform. And he left home, not giving up the shackles of dependence. Because if we're dependent on so many material things and so many material people, we are shackled to in a particular situation. So Dhritarashtra threw it off and left for the north to the Himalayas. Yudhisthira and Sanjaya could not understand the depth of the realization, the change that Dhritarashtra had undergone. And therefore, they were simply worrying about him. What possibly were they worried about? They worried about what happened, because if he was alone, he's blind. Who will feed him? Who will take care of him? Like a dependent child. He'll get himself into trouble. Someone will attack him and someone will rob him. An animal, some tiger will come along and eat him. He'll be somehow or another placed at the mercy of the elements. I get nothing to eat and a difficulty. Naturally, this is what Sanjay and Yudhisthira were thinking, because they were in the position of the one being depended upon. Vidura's preaching to Dhritarashtra was, don't depend on anyone. Who, on the other hand, should he depend on? What was the basic preaching? Who should he depend on? Depend on Krishna. Because ultimately, everyone is dependent on Krishna. And don't be enamored by the fallible soldiers of the material world, and be dependent on that which will cave in. It must cave in. Rather, depend on Krishna. He is actually Asraya. He is actually the shelter of the living entity. So he was saying, Vidura's preaching was, who should you depend on? Depend on Krishna. So there are two things. There is the person who is depending in illusion, and then there is the person who is depending, being dependent, being depended upon. And the person who is depended upon, his anxiety is different than the person who is depending upon him. And Yudhisthira and Sanjay, their position was the ones who were being depended upon. And actually, the one who is depended upon, his illusion, different than we may think, is even deeper, thicker than the one who is depending. And this is commonly seen in the families, because the children have an attachment to the parents, and the parents naturally have an attachment to the children. But whose attachment is stronger? The one who is depending. The children who is depending upon their parents, their attachment is not as strong as the attachment of the one who is being dependent upon. So Vidura, so the parent's attachment to the child is stronger than the child's attachment to the parents. It's actually by the strength of that attachment of the parents to the child that the child is controlled. So Dhritarashtra was depending, and Sanjay and Yudhisthira were being dependent upon. Vidura preached to Dhritarashtra and drove out his illusion, and Dhritarashtra therefore left home to depend on Krishna. Now who, when with Vidura gone, who will preach to Sanjay, and who will preach to Yudhisthira Maharaj and remove their illusion, thinking that, oh, how will without me, how will Dhritarashtra survive? When Dhritarashtra's mood is, Krishna will protect me. I'll be protected by the Lord. So Narada Muni came then, by the divine arrangement of Krishna. And Narada, in text 41, said, O pious king, do not lament for anyone. Why? Because everyone is under the control of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, all living beings and their leaders carry on worship to be well protected. It is He only who brings them together and disperses them. This is actually the situation. Actually, Narada Muni came to dispel the grief of Yudhisthira Maharaj and Sanjay, because they were worried about what had happened to Dhritarashtra. So actually, and Gandhari, and Vidura. So actually, Narada came to dispel the grief by telling them, and he will tell them what happened to his uncle and aunt, and his two uncles and his aunt. But before he tells them, he's going to preach to them the actual philosophy about who is everyone being, who, what is the power, what is the position of someone who is protecting another? So the first thing he says is that everyone is under the control of the Supreme Lord, the living beings and their leaders. That's on both sides of the relationship. The living beings are the ones depending, and the leaders are the ones being dependent upon. That's Dhritarashtra and Yudhisthira. They carry on worship to be well protected. So that means that ultimately both are only under the protection of Krishna, because it is He, it is Krishna, the supreme independent controller, who brings everyone together and then disperses them. He brings everyone together. It is not me who does not. It is not any controller in the material world. This is actually out of our control. Coming together, dispersion. All happening by the supreme independent will of the Lord. Prabhupada's purport in this regard, quite interesting. Please listen. Every living being, either in the material world or in the spiritual world, is under the control of the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead. Beginning from Brahmaji, the leader of this universe, down to the insignificant ant, all are abiding by the order of the Supreme Lord. Thus, the constitutional position of the living entity is subordination under the control of the Lord. The foolish living being, especially man, artificially rebels against the law of the Supreme and thus becomes chastised as an asura or a lawbreaker. A living being is placed in a particular position by the order of the Supreme Lord, and he is again shifted from that place by the order of the Supreme Lord or his authorized agents. Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Chandra, Maharaj Yudhisthira, or in modern history, Napoleon, Akbar, Alexander, Gandhi, Subhash, and Nehru, are all servants of the Lord, and they are placed in and removed from their respective positions by the supreme will of the Lord. And these people are the powerful ones. What to speak of us tiny, insignificant living entities? We are put in a position, not only a big, big post, but any position by the Lord, and then whoosh, can be removed just in a half of a moment also. No one is independent. Even though such men or leaders rebel so as not to recognize the supremacy of the Lord, they are put under still more rigorous laws of the material world by different miseries. Only the foolish man, therefore, says there is no God. Maharaj Yudhisthira was being convinced of this naked truth because he was greatly overwhelmed by the sudden departure of his old uncle and aunt. Maharaj Dhritarashtra was placed in that position according to his past deeds. He had already suffered or enjoyed the benefits accrued to him in the past, but due to his good luck, somehow or another, he had a good younger brother, Vidura, and by his instructions, he left to achieve salvation by closing all accounts in the material world. Ordinarily, one cannot change the course of one's due happiness and distress by plan. Everyone has to accept them, happiness and distress, as they come under the subtle arrangements of Kal, or invincible time. There is no use trying to counteract them. The best thing, therefore, that one should endeavor to achieve salvation, freedom from the whole material situation, and not become entangled just by in the vain attempt to bring misery or to bring happiness close and misery far from us. Therefore, one should endeavor to achieve salvation, and this prerogative is given only to man because of his developed condition of mental activities and intelligence. Only for man are there different Vedic instructions for attainment of salvation, during the human form of existence. One who misuses this opportunity of advanced intelligence is verily condemned and put into different types of miseries, either in this present life or in the future. That is the way that the Supreme Lord controls everyone. As a cow bound through the nose by a long rope is conditioned, so also human beings are bound by different Vedic injunctions, and they are conditioned to obey the orders of the Lord. The point being that one, without becoming entangled in the happiness and distresses of the material world, which are unavoidable, rather one should do one's own duty. Follow Shastra and do one's own duty, according to Shastra. Prabhupada explains in the purport. All living beings in the material world have taken up the risk of conditioned life by their own selection and are thus entrapped by the laws of material nature. The only way to get out of the entanglement is to agree to obey the Supreme. But instead of becoming free from the clutches of Maya or illusion, foolish human beings become bound up by different nomenclatures, being designated as Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras, Hindus, Muslims, Indians, Europeans, Americans, Chinese, and many others. And thus they carry out the orders of the Supreme Lord under the influence of respective scriptural or legislative injunctions. The statutory laws of the state are imperfect imitation, replicas of religious codes. The secular state or the godless state allows the citizens to break the law of God, but restricts them from disobeying the laws of the state. The result is that the people in general suffer more by breaking the laws of God than by obeying the imperfect laws made by man. So the point being is that one should focus one's consciousness on the pleasure of Krishna. Because we, by nature, circumstance and nature must be controlled. We cannot avoid it. So we should willingly, Narada Muni is saying, place ourselves under the control of Krishna through the Shastric regulations. And even if we don't do that, we are still controlled by the law of the state. And if we decide we don't need that, we break the law, then we're still put in an even more stringent situation, strict, in jail, in prison. So Krishna is the only one who is the proprietor, and everything goes on by his will. And therefore, Narada Muni is preaching to you to steer that don't think that you are the controller, and don't think that you are the proprietor. You should just do your duty. According to the order of the Lord, do your duty for his pleasure. And the result and what happens and the comings and the goings, the putting together and the breaking apart of people, accept that as Krishna. As a player sets up and disperses his playthings according to his own sweet will, so the supreme will of the Lord brings men together and separates them. The first line of Prabhupada's purport, Prabhupada says, we must know for certain that the particular position in which we are now set up is an arrangement of the supreme will in terms of our own acts in the past. O King, Narada continues, in all circumstances, whether you consider the soul to be an eternal principle, or the material body to be perishable, or everything to exist in the impersonal absolute truth, or everything to be an inexplicable combination of matter and spirit, feelings of separation are due only to illusory affection and nothing more. So he's preaching so strongly to him. Krishna preaches in the same way to Arjuna. Whether you accept that the body is the self, then since the body is going to die, what is the meaning of the affection that you have to someone else? Because then when, if you accept that there is no soul and we are just bodies, then it is just chemicals interacting. So what is the depth of feeling of chemicals interacting? It is meaningless. On the other hand, if you accept that there is a soul, and that I'm a soul and you're a soul, then what is the meaning or the value of the affections we have for the bodies? Again, illusion. Or if we accept that everything is one, everything is ultimately Brahma, spirit, then what is the meaning of the separation between us and the misery of that experience? That is also illusion. So whatever you believe in this regard, should know that what you are experiencing, the misery of the separation on the material platform, is simply illusion, regardless of your belief system. So actually, Krishna is checkmating, or Narada Muni is checkmating Yudhisthira to show him that this is not proper, what you are experiencing. Of course, he understands that we are all eternal souls. Krishna explains this in the Bhagavad Gita. Dehino smriyatadehe komaram jovanam jara tatadehantara praptiya dhiras tatranamuyate. Because Arjuna was very upset because he was facing in battle his dear, dear grandfather Bhishma and his teacher Dronacharya and so many friends and so many cousins, so many well-wishers, so many relatives. And he was thinking how horrible it's going to be if they are killed. It will be horrible. But Krishna counters with that verse, that there is no question of death for the soul. They're eternal, he tells Arjuna. And then Arjuna naturally thinks, okay, maybe the soul is eternal, but I don't have so much of a relationship with the souls. I have a relationship with these people and their bodies. And that's going to be terminated, finished. So therefore, naturally, I'm feeling anxiety and lamentation. And then Krishna replies to that with matra spashasta kante asitos na sukha dukha daha agama payino anityas. But these comings and goings, the dealings between individuals, the happiness and distress, the summer and the winter, they come and go anityas. Agama payino anityas. They are temporary. They come and they go. Tamstitikshasvabharata. Therefore, what should one do about the feelings of separation, the feelings of happiness, the feelings of misery that naturally come in this world, like the summer and the winter come? One simply must be tolerant. That's Krishna's instructions. Therefore, in text 45, give up your anxiety due to ignorance of the self. You are now thinking of how they, who are helpless, poor creatures, will exist without you. The gross material body, made of five elements, is already under the control of eternal time, kala, action, karma, and the modes of material nature, guna. How then can it, being already in the jaws of the serpent, protect others? So you're thinking, my dear Yudhisthira, you are thinking that how are they going to, these poor, helpless creatures, how will they exist without you? But actually, Narada says, they are not under your protection. They are being controlled by time, their own karma, and the three modes of material nature. They're in the jaws, they, the bodies are in the jaws of the serpent. Your body is controlled. One can't even protect oneself, so how can one who cannot protect oneself be called upon ultimately to protect another? Your body is under the grip of the serpent of time. So how can you protect them? You're thinking of yourself as the protector, and how are they going to exist without you? This is the illusion that the protector falls into. There is a great thrill to be depended upon. But as Prabhupada explains in his purport to 45, that one of Krishna's name is Bhuta Brit, which means the maintainer of all living entities. Gotripte varanam tata. This is the main element of surrender, actually. That one has to look upon Krishna as his protector and know that it is Krishna who is protecting everyone. So then, naturally, one will think, okay, Krishna is the protector of someone. But what happens if he goes into the forest, Dhritarashtra has gone into the forest? What happens if a tiger comes and eats him? Or who's going to feed him? These two are the typical anxieties of the protectors. What happens if some animal comes or someone comes and wants to devour him? And again, who's going to feed? So in text 47, the law of nature is cited by Narada Muni. Those who are devoid of hands are prey for those who have hands. Those who are devoid of legs are prey for the four-legged. The weak are the subsistence of the strong, and the general rule holds that one living entity, one living being, is food for another. Diva divasya jivanam. One living entity is food for another. Somehow or another, the birds in the sky get their food, and the beasts on the earth get their food. Somehow or another, people get their food. One way or another, people eat, people drink. So don't worry about Dhritarashtra. Somehow or another, by the law of God, there are so many living entities being fed. He will also be fed. And on the other hand, if he is eaten even by a tiger, what is there to lament? Because this is nature's law. Everyone must eventually die. This is nature's law. It is natural, not unnatural. So he is preaching the philosophy that brings detachment to the heart. Because why? Because naturally speaking, if we have dependents or we are a dependent, we will and we must look to them. We will and we must look to them on the practical level. But ultimately, we should know that it is only Krishna who protects us. And only Krishna can give protection to another. And when our eyes, when our consciousness is blinded by too much material affection and entangled in all the anxieties caused by that, the tendency is to forget completely about Krishna. That ultimately it is Him who is the protector. And I'm worried about protecting others, but I myself am in a precarious position, not focusing my mind on Krishna. So one should actually, Narada is telling you to steal, one should do his duty as ordained by Krishna through Shastra. One should do one's duty. If one's duty is to protect, one should protect. And if one's duty is to be protected by another, one should seek protection from another. But one should have his mind focused on Krishna, understanding that Krishna is the giver of protection and no one else. Prabhupada explains in the purport two texts. Well, first we'll read text 48. Therefore, Narada tells Yudhisthira, O king, you should look to the Supreme Lord only. That is the ultimate instruction. Don't be bewildered, because when we're in anxiety and bewildered and entangled by so much of the affections and aversions of the material world, we immediately forget about Krishna. So therefore, O king, break the strength of your attachment. Do your duty, but break the attachment and look to the Supreme Lord only. He is one without a second. He is the Supreme. Because if anyone can protect someone, Mare Krishna Rake Ke, Rake Krishna Mare Ke. This point that Krishna, we have seen this previously with Yudhisthira Maharaj himself, became aware of this antara bahira vashtita, when Kunti Devi prayed to Krishna after the weapon, the brahmastra of Asatama, was shot towards both the Pandavas and Prikit Maharaj within the womb. And Krishna was inside, so he has the facility. He was inside Uttar. So he actually has the facility, the power to protect. And he did protect Yudhisthira. So look towards Krishna. He is Asama Udha. No one is equal to him. No one is greater than him. So he is the right person to look for protection. This point... this point of being protected by Krishna actually breaks our entanglement in the material world. If we can just become fixed in this, we will become like Prahlad Maharaj, who was not in any anxiety despite he was in the most precarious and difficult situation of anyone. There are stories of different boys in the Bhagavatam. There is Prahlad Maharaj, there is Narad Muni, there is Dhruva Maharaj. And of all of them, Narada Muni was in, he was wandering around, a young boy, he had no one to protect him. Difficult circumstance. Dhruva Maharaj also, due to his determination to become a great, great king, was wandering around unprotected in the forest. Very, very difficult circumstance. But Prahlad Maharaj's situation was the most difficult. And he wasn't in the forest at all. He was at home because his father was continuously trying to kill him. But Prahlad Maharaj had the slightest trace of anxiety, because he felt himself always so close to Krishna. And Krishna always as his maintainer and protector. Prabhupada explains in the purport to 49. Although qualitatively one with the Lord, the living being, due to contamination of the material world, is pervertedly manifested. An interesting use of words, that we are manifested. We are here, certainly, in the material world, but our nature is perverted. It is manifest. We are manifest here in a perverted way, not the actual way of our existence. And therefore, the living entity experiences so-called happiness and distress in the material world. This is unnatural. Such experiences are all ephemeral and do not affect the spirit soul. The perception of such ephemeral happiness and distress is due only to the forgetfulness of his qualities, which are equal to the Lord's. There is, however, a regular current from the Lord himself, from within and without, by which to rectify the fallen condition of the living being. From within, he corrects the desiring living being as localized Paramatma, as the Supersoul. And from without, he corrects by his manifestations the spiritual master and the revealed scriptures. One should look unto the Lord. One should not be disturbed by the so-called manifestations of happiness or distress, but he should try to cooperate with the Lord in his outward activities for correcting the fallen souls. By his order only, by Krishna's order only, one should become a spiritual master and cooperate with the Lord. Amara gai guruhai tare desh. This is actually the command of the Lord to everyone, to become guru and save the land, save the people. Because the people are in such, naturally they're in such illusion, in such distress, not understanding the purpose of life, not understanding how to react when life takes its downward and its upward turns. Identification with the body brings such misery, alternating misery and happiness. So one, on Krishna's order, should cooperate with Krishna and help people. One should not become a spiritual master for one's personal benefit, for some material gain, or as an avenue of business or occupation for earning livelihood. Bona fide spiritual masters who look unto the Supreme Lord to cooperate with him are actually qualitatively one with the Lord. Kutosto akshara uchite. Because this is what makes one with the Lord, although we are still eternally individuals, but we become one with Krishna's desire. And then one actually can become empowered to do wonderful things. If one looks to Krishna instead of looking away from Krishna. So those who try to cooperate with Krishna are qualitatively one with the Lord, and the forgetful ones are perverted reflections only. Yudhisthira Maharaj is advised by Narada, therefore, not to be disturbed by the affairs of so-called happiness and distress. So he preached strongly against the happiness and distress, but that's not actually the preaching, in one sense. Not to be averse to the material world, but rather to be neutral towards the material world. Neutral. And the consciousness of all living entities should be focused on Krishna. So therefore he said, not to be disturbed by the affairs of so-called happiness and distress, but to look only unto the Lord to execute the mission for which the Lord had descended. That was his prime duty. So how should one look to the Lord? What does that mean? Where is he? For instance, because Yudhisthira was on the planet, and at the same time Krishna was on that planet. He's everywhere. In the last verse we heard that he is one without a second. He manifests himself by different energies. He is both within and without. Now how do you look towards someone who is manifest everywhere, who is within and without everything? How do you look away from him? How do you look towards him if he's everywhere? So therefore Narada continues with this, that not only is he everywhere, but also he has assumed, he is in his eternal form of full bliss. And although we should know how he is everywhere, still we should especially look to his real form of bliss. That's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So therefore, in text 49, Narada continues, That's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, in the guise of all-devouring time, Kalarup, has now descended on earth to eliminate the envious from the world. Prabhupada explains in the purport, for the devotees, his factual form is disclosed, and for the non-devotees, he appears like Kalarup, which is his causal form. What does that mean? That time, or Kalarup, is the causal form of the Lord. That means that through Krishna's energy of time, through Krishna's potency of time, Krishna is causing everything within this world to happen. For the non-devotees, although they don't like to look towards Krishna, they can't avoid this point that time is moving and time is shifting everything from here to there, from there to here. We try to stop time, but as the expression goes, time and tide wait for no man. Time pushes forward. It acts as it likes. It elevates us one moment and then throws us down mercilessly on the rocks of our fate the next moment. One moment we're a hero, the next we're a villain. One day we're famous, the next day we're infamous. One day we're poor, the next day we're rich. One day we have so many friends and everyone wants to shake our hand to congratulate us. The next day no one will even look at us. This is the force of time pushing through our karma, through the modes of material nature. And therefore, because time is unstoppable, it is Krishna. It is actually an energy of the Paramatma. So the non-devotees, they see Krishna in this very, very fearful form. Everyone is afraid of the time feature of Krishna because it ultimately means everyone's destruction and the destruction of every situation that we are attached to. So this form, this causal form which causes everything to occur, is not at all pleasing to the asuras, those who are against the Lord. And therefore they think of the Lord as formless in order to feel secure that they will not be vanquished by the Lord. But actually, regardless of how they conceive of the Lord as arupa, or formless, nirakar, without any qualities, actually this time element continues. But the devotees see Krishna in a different form, the most beautiful form. And Narada hints more about this. The Lord has already performed his duties to help the demigods, and he is awaiting the rest. You Pandavas may wait as long as the Lord is here on earth, because Krishna was there in Dwarka. Although he is that form of time, yet he is also the form of Satchidananda Vigraha. And what was he doing in Dwarka? He wasn't just going around exhibiting his destructive feature of time, but he was performing incredible pastimes. He had built the entire city of Dwarka. He gathered so many wives, had so many palaces. He was interacting with the citizens of Dwarka. He was fighting with this asura. He was going here and there. Krishna was performing all these wonderful, superhuman pastimes as he was in Dwarka. But now, Narada Muni is hinting to Yudhisthira by saying that you should wait, you Pandavas should wait on earth here in this world for as long as the Lord is here. So he's giving him the clue, which we will see manifest in the following two chapters. Actually, Krishna has already left this world. And Narada is giving the instruction in a bit of an indirect way. He's telling him very indirectly. He doesn't want to speak directly about Krishna, the Yadu dynasty's departure, as Vidura didn't want to speak directly about it, but he's telling him that it's coming very, very, very soon. And you just wait, and as soon as you know that Krishna's left, then you leave also. So thus Narada Muni has preached to Yudhisthira, explaining the same point of detachment, independence, and protection by Krishna from the other side as Vidura had explained to Dhritarashtra. Don't depend on another. Know that only Krishna is the one that ultimately protects. And to Yudhisthira, he said the same thing. Don't think that you're the one who is being the great protector. Because to be the protector of someone, you have to be the supreme controller. Because how could you protect unless you can control? Or one can protect only to the degree that one can control. So how you're completely controlled, Narada tells Yudhisthira. You're under the control of time, of your own karma, the three modes of material nature. Of course, he's speaking to Yudhisthira as if he was a common man like us. So don't think that you're the protector. Know that Krishna is the protector. But do your duty according to Shastra. Do your duty, but look towards the Lord. Keep your consciousness focused upon Him, Krishna, who is inside, outside, who is doing everything through His energies, and who is here on this earth at this very moment. Look towards that sweet, all-attractive personality of Godhead. And when you find out that He has left this world, His mission being completed, then you should recognize that as your cue to also leave the world. So, after the philosophy was spoken to Yudhisthira, now Yudhisthira will hear what actually did happen to Dhritarashtra. Narada Muni will now tell him, starting in text 51 until the end of the chapter. O King, your uncle Dhritarashtra, his brother Vidur, and his wife Gandhari have gone to the southern side of the Himalaya mountains, where there are shelters of the great sages. The place is called Saptaruta, divided by seven, because there the waters of the sacred Ganges were divided into seven branches. This was done for the satisfaction of the seven great rishis. There's a place called Saptarishi up there in the, not in the highest part of the Himalayan mountains, but in the lower part, the southern side. On the bank of the Saptasrota, Dhritarashtra is now engaged in beginning Astanga Yoga. By bathing three times daily in the morning, noon, and evening, by performing the Agnihotra sacrifice, that bathing is part of the Astanga Yoga means the yoga that has eight different parts. So the first part is Yam Niyam, first two parts, the rules and regulations, what you should do and what you shouldn't do. So this bathing, etc., is part of what you should do because that keeps one in the mode of goodness, which brings detachment and knowledge. By performing the Agnihotra sacrifice with fire and by drinking only water, also the yum yum, this helps control the mind and the senses and frees one completely from thoughts of familial affection. One who has controlled the sitting posture, so it's yum yum, then asan, then the sitting postures, the yogic asanas, and then the breathing processes, which is pranayama. So by being able to circulate the different airs in the body through the asanas, then by the breath control of pranayama, then one controls the mind. And then one can turn the senses towards the absolute personality of Godhead. That's called pratyahara, when the senses are withdrawn from the sense objects and turned within. And thus one becomes immune to the contaminations of the modes of nature, namely mundane goodness, passion, and ignorance. And then, after pratyahara, then dharan, dhyan, one's senses and mind are completely controlled, then one focuses his consciousness on the Supreme Lord and ultimately samadhi. Samadhi means equal and dhi means focus or meditation. So one is focused regardless of what's happening externally, one is focused in samadhi, this, on the Supreme Lord. Then, text 55, Dhritarashtra will have to amalgamate his pure identity with intelligence and then merge into the Supreme Being with knowledge of his qualitative oneness as a living entity with the Supreme Brahman. Being freed from the blocked sky, he will have to rise to the spiritual sky. He will have to suspend all the actions of his senses, so now it's in the future tense what he will do, even from the outside, and he will have to be impervious to the interactions of the senses, which are influenced by the modes of material nature. After renouncing all material duties, that's the yoga rukshu stage, or yoga ruddha, he must become immovably established beyond all sources of hindrances on the path. So this is the process of Astanga Yoga, where one reverses the process of entanglement in the material world. So one takes, because now we are souls and we are covered by so many different coverings, the astakosh of the coverings of starting with the false ego, then the going from subtle to gross, then the intelligence, then the mind, then air, etc., or ether, air. What's the next one? Fire, water, earth. So these are the coverings. So all those coverings in Astanga Yoga, through the practice of Astanga Yoga, they are given back to the great sources of those coverings, and one himself remains aloof from all the coverings and fixed on the spiritual platform as a soul. So that's the idea. And then Narada says, O king, because remember, Yudhisthira is hearing this. He's not only thinking about a soul. We can imagine he's not thinking about Dhritarashtra the soul. He's thinking about his uncle. And he's wanting to go and save him and protect him. But Narada tells him, it's too late, there's no use, there's nothing for you to do, you can relax. It's all being taken care of by Krishna, the Supreme Protector. O King, O Yudhisthira, Dhritarashtra will quit his body, he will die, the body will die, most probably on the fifth day from today, and his body will turn to ashes. So there's no use, Yudhisthira, for you to go out and try to bring him back, because he will die. By the time he will get there, it will already be over. And Yudhisthira may think, well, then I should still go to perform the funeral ceremony and make sure his body is burnt properly so he goes to a proper destination. But there's no use in that either, Narada says, because his body will turn to ashes. That means it will automatically go on fire by his yogic practice and go into ashes. Well, then Yudhisthira might be thinking, well, then I at least should go and bring Gandhari back. But no, Yudhisthira, what's being requested of you is complete detachment. Gandhari's fate is also in the hands of the Lord. And Narada says, while outside observing her husband, who will burn in the fire of mystic power along with his thatched cottage, his chaste wife will enter the fire with rapt attention. She will do sati. Prabhupada explains in the purport how the ceremony in which when the husband dies and his body is burned and the wife goes on the funeral pyre and she herself burns, this is really for a different age, when the devotion of the wives to their husband was so intense that they felt the burning of the separation. If their husband died and they remained alive, they felt that separation to be less painful than the fire. So therefore, the fire appeared cool to them as compared to how their heart was breaking and burning in the fire of affectionate separation from their husband. But then, as Kali Yuga progressed, it was forced. Your husband is now died, now we throw you on the fire. No, 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 yes, yes, yes. So that was very, very cruel when people, they didn't have that sentiment, so it was actually stopped by law. Prabhupada explains that, and he says that was a good thing. Because the sentiment wasn't there. So therefore, as Prabhupada explains in the last line of the purport to text 58, the prophecy of Narada Muni to Maharaj Yudhisthira forbade him to go to his widowed aunt to bring her back either. There was nothing to do. Well then, at least Yudhisthira is thinking, how about Vidura? I should go and bring him back. And Narada says, Vidura, being affected with delight and grief, and this explains the situation. On one hand, there's the philosophy, and on the other hand, there's the natural sentiment. So Vidura, even who preached, was feeling delight on one hand that he had gotten Dhritarashtra out, but on the other hand, he was feeling that he couldn't help him anymore. He was feeling the grief of that. He couldn't actually turn him into a pure devotee. And Prabhupada explains, Vidura was certainly very mortified by the death of his brother and sister-in-law. And the only remedy to mitigate such lamentation was to go out on pilgrimage. Again, he had just come back from tens, he was out for more than 20, maybe more than 30 years. He came back for a very short period to do some preaching, and then out again. So therefore, thus Maharaj Yudhisthira had no chance to call back Vidura, his surviving uncle, either. End the grief, Yudhisthira. Having spoken thus, the great sage Narada, along with his Veena, ascended into outer space. Yudhisthira kept his instructions in his heart and was able to get rid of all lamentations. So that's the end of chapter 13. Thank you very much. Now 14 and 15, we'll go through those quickly. I think we do those next week. We're moving very, very fast. The disappearance of Lord Krishna, and then the Pandavas retire. Any questions or comments? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.